And I wanted to ask you first, when did you develop your passion for jazz? What helped you get your start in exploring jazz music?
It was probably when my family moved from Wisconsin to Connecticut. I was born in Racine, Wisconsin, and my dad is a now retired journalist who wrote for the Racine Journal Times, but then was sort of discovered through his work by the Hartford Courant, and there were some editors there that invited him to come out and apply for an education beat job out in Hartford, Connecticut. So we, long story short, we moved the whole family out to West Hartford in 1985, and I ended up at a high school that had this incredible award-winning jazz program, and including being lucky enough to be in the same grade with Brad Meldow. So we met at age 15 and started learning how to play together, and in this this jazz band that was pretty disciplined and really serious about what it was doing. And so as a result, I had some older students, a couple years older than me, that were already listening to Charlie Parker and listening to John Coltrane and Miles Davis, and they sort of started to turn me on to a lot of the classic music, and I fell in love with it really hard at that point and became obsessed with learning how to play it.
In interviews, you've mentioned that you recommend a period of imitation of other artists, such as John Coltrane,
mm-hmm.
And Sonny Rollins, who you really admire. Why do you recommend a period of imitation of those artists?
Well, I think that, to me, the most effective jazz musicians have roots. I feel like they all did. I feel like if you listen to Thelonious Monk, you can hear roots in Duke Ellington. I feel like if you, listen to, Stan Getz, you can hear roots in Lester Young. Everyone is coming from somewhere. You listen to, Miles Davis had his roots in Dizzy Gillespie, and a couple other people as well. But I would say that sort of tradition of realizing that what you're creating is not made in a vacuum, that it actually comes from roots, and it comes from the blues, and it comes from a feeling of your forefathers, that that's really a strong way to go. And I think it's like learning any other language. I mean, it's like what we do as babies. We listen to our parents talk, and we learn how to make a word, and then we learn how to make a sentence. And it's really the same thing with jazz. It's really a language. It's a living language. So I look at it that way, and I tell I have my students do those exercises because I need them to be fluent in that language of improvisation so that they can be able to converse with other musicians in that way.
When you teach jazz clinics, what is the most important lesson that you try to impart to your students?
Well, I try and make sure that they're immersed in the history of the music. I think that's the most important thing. I guess it's a two-pointed attack that I try and do. I try and make sure that they really realize that the only way they're going to learn how to play the music is if they really listen to and are aware of the great musicians of the past. And at the same time, to make sure that it stays a social music, to make sure that they're going out and playing with their peers, going out to see their mentors as much as possible, going to play in situations where they might be a little bit over their head, so that they actually kind of, maybe get their butts kicked a little bit and have an experience that maybe it's a little bit sink or swim for them. Those moments are really invaluable, and I think that's to me, it's the combination of being really diligent about kind of learning your jazz history and then applying it in a real-time situation with other musicians that really does the trick.
And my guest today is Joel Fromm. Joel, I wanted to ask also, too, you worked with a wide variety of other jazz stars, including Kurt Elling, mm-hmm. Drummer Matt Wilson, mm-hmm. and many others. Could you tell me about some of the experiences you've had with these accomplished jazz artists?
Sure. Actually, we were just talking. I was talking in the car with Mitch about coming through his alma mater town of Iowa City, and we would play at the Sanctuary with Matt Wilson's band, and we'd do all sorts of crazy stuff. That was back when Matt had the band with Andrew D'Angelo and me and the great Japanese bass player Yosuke Inoue. And that band was pretty nuts. So we, sometimes solos wouldn't even be solos. It would be like, okay, your solo is going to be a beer drinking contest between you and Yosuke. Let's see who can finish a pint first. And that would be the solo. And then we go back into the interlude, stuff like that. It was like almost kind of a performance art band. It was very silly. So I was kind of just talking in the car about some of those Midwestern days where we do these Midwestern tours, through different colleges, and That was a lot of fun. And I think, you know, the thing that sort of spurred me on to the next level was I met Betty Carter and did her Jazz Ahead program. That was about in 97. And I did the Thelonious Monk competition right around the same time. And the combination of those two things really sort of gave me a little bit more notoriety, and people started noticing me more. I ended up doing, right after that, Larry Goldings called me, and I was in a quartet with him, with Scott Colley and Jeff Ballard. Actually, not Scott Colley, Dennis, the late, great Dennis Irwin and Jeff Ballard. And then things started to really take off after that. I ended up getting my own recording contract after recording with Matt Wilson on Palmetto Records, and I ended up doing, you know, the record with Brad, and also Sorry No Decaf and The Navigator with a lot of great musicians. And, you know, all of that sort of led to a lot of great sideman work, especially working with Jane Monheit for the 4 years that I did. I recorded with her and worked with her so much that many, many singers sort of came out of the woodwork asking me to play with them. I mean, including Kurt Elling, Anne Hampton Calloway, Dina DeRose, Freddie Cole. You know, I did just a ton of vocal work. I got to play with John Hendricks before he passed away, Betty Carter. It's really been a nice ride in that way, and I really enjoy working with good vocalists. It's something that I always have had an affinity for since I, you know, used to listen to Lester Young with Billy, or, you know, Etta Jones with Houston Person. You know, those kind of vocal tenor tandems were always really deep in my heart. So I've been very fortunate to have a lot of those kind of situations arise out of all those experiences.
Well, I really enjoyed your work on Freddie Cole's Grammy-nominated album, My Mood Is You.
Thank you.
Very enchanting and a lot of fun to listen to. And we're gonna listen to the title track of that right now, in fact, to head into this next part of the program here. Freddie Cole on the vocals with Joel Fromm, my guest today on Jazzy Afternoon. He's on the tenor saxophone for My Mood Is You, right here on Jazz in the Afternoon. And Joel, that was you with the one and only Freddie Cole.
Yeah.
For My Mood Is You. And that was a Grammy-nominated record from Freddie, My Mood Is You, the title track there. You're featured on the tenor saxophone. And other players include John DeMartino at the piano, Elias Bailey on the bass, and Quentin Baxter on the drums, and others. Freddie Cole on the vocals, and my guest today is Joel Fromm. We just heard him on the tenor saxophone with Freddie Cole for My Mood Is You. And Joel, I wanted to ask, how has the great saxophonist Sonny Rollins influenced your development?
In a pretty profound way. I think it really started, I had a saxophone teacher at a music summer camp named Tom Christensen, who's a really fine tenor saxophone player. And he was a few years older than me, and I was about 17 at the time. And I was already into Charlie Parker, and I was also into Mike Brecker and some other more modern players. Tom said, you know, I'd really like you to hear this guy, Sonny Rollins, and I'm going to make you a cassette tape. And what he did is he made me a cassette copy of his LP of Sonny Rollins Live at the Village Vanguard with Elvin Jones and Wilbur Ware. And he said, I'm going to give you an assignment. I want you to write down what Sonny plays on the melody and his solo. I want you to transcribe it on Softly as in the Morning Sunrise. And that was my very first transcription assignment ever from any teacher. And so I said, okay. So I remember taking it home and putting it on my little boombox and listening to this cassette, and immediately I was just so taken with the feel and the sound and the time and the humor and everything that was inherent in Sonny's playing. I really fell in love with it really hard immediately. It had this sort of, you know, quirky poetry to it, and this amazing swing, and of course Elvin Jones and Wilbur Ware sound incredible on that. So that was really my first entree into the world of Sonny Rollins. And then, you know, I started going back and listening to the other records, listening to Nuke's Time, and listening to, you know, the great take on Blues 7, where the amazing blues that he plays so beautifully and thematically. And every time I would hear him over and over again on different records, he would just blow me away every time. And, of course, you know, Tenor Madness with Coltrane. So I spent a lot of time really trying to emulate his time, feel, his sound, his manner of improvisation. And one of the things that I really admire the most about him is that he has this sort of like ability to free associate on as an improviser. He always is throwing in little references to other things. But at the same time, while he's being humorous and droll, he's always just incredibly logical, and everything makes sense. And there's just a level of really deep harmonic and rhythmic understanding there that's very very impressive. So that all of those things kind of add up to why he was one of my main mentors, main influences.
You're a jazz educator yourself, and one time you said that you learned the most on the bandstand in real time. And why did you say that?
Well, because, you know, I believe that jazz at its root is reaction to what's going on around you. I think ultimately, if you're really playing at your best, it means that your ears are open and that you are, in a way, like a great athlete, reacting to what's going on around you to make whatever is going on around you successful. So the only way to develop that skill is to realize that it's a social music, that you have to know how to play with others and how to compliment the players around you. One of the exercises that I have my students do is to think about, while they're in jam sessions, you know, I say, open up your ears and assess what's around you. Is the band playing very, very busy around you? Are they playing very dense? And if that's the case, you might want to play less. You might want to be a foil for what's going on around you to create a contrast. So I think in sometimes kind of larger musical terms like that, instead of getting caught up in you know, the minutiae of what's going on technically, I think in terms of like, what does this music need on a grand scale? You know, does it need to be softer? Does it need to be louder? Does it need to be denser? Does it need to be more lighthearted? You know, all of those. Does it need to be bluesier? So those are all questions that I'm asking myself in a split second on the bandstand, and you know, trying to sort of, you know, rudder the ship however I think it needs to go at the time.
Speaking of the bandstand, you're going to be performing tonight at the Jewel, and there's two shows happening tonight, 6:30 and 8:30, and who's going to be joining you on stage for the performance tonight?
Well, Mitch Town, who's with me right now, fantastic organ player, is going to be playing with me, and I'm really looking forward to that. We're playing a lot of my original compositions tonight that we've prepared. The drummer is, of course, I'm blanking right now.
Dana Murray,
thank you. Dana Murray on drums, who I actually knew a little bit when he was living in New York City, and I've always really admired his drumming. I have a lot of respect for his musicianship, so I'm sure we're going to have a really good time.
And I think there's going to be a show tomorrow night as well, if I believe.
That's right.
Okay, 6:30 and 8:30 tonight and tomorrow night at the Jewel. And I look forward to seeing you there tonight. Thanks so much, Joel, for joining me today on Jazz the Afternoon. And it's always a pleasure to listen to your music and share it with all of the fans who are listening in today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chris.